Good morning. All right. So you guys already finished the marathon.
Yeah.
Already cleaned up. Good job. Nice to see you. We just started practice period. So that's an 8-week period of intensified practice that some people sign up to do and some don't. But we're all here. But the theme of the practice period is impermanence, interdependence, and empowerment. And so I thought it would be cool to just start with a talk about impermanence and interdependence, but and kindness. Just a little twist. So, I don't know, perhaps some of you came here in an automobile or maybe on a bicycle and you arrived at an intersection where it was impossible to travel forward. For there were people running past you. Or perhaps at some point some people were going to run past you. And so I just imagine, or if you weren't in that situation, perhaps you can imagine yourself in that situation and you might think, wonderful! Wonderful. Normally this road is open, but all things change and now it's closed. Or maybe you think, oh, darn it. I wanted to go. You think, oh, this feeling is impermanent. Wow. Or maybe you just think, wow, this experience of being on this bicycle or in this automobile with this orange blockade in front of me and people running is so vivid and will never, never occur again. Wow. Precious. Or maybe you think, wow, I'm really annoyed right now. And my annoyance is deeply connected to the power and joy of this experience that these people have been training for years. And they're completely unaware that they're impacting me. Interdependence. Wow. I'm pretty sure this is exactly how it's going down for all the people who are not at this Dharma talk. So for all of you, if you go home and listen to this talk, we're thinking of you. And of course, this is sort of facetious. Because probably there are people who are just really annoyed. It's, you know, oh, I wanted to go and I can't. The thing that I thought would be here for me has passed away. It was an imagination that I could be there with my friends at Zen Center this morning. That's gone. Impermanent. Or they don't feel any of that connection to the people in that race and what that whole thing is about to all those people. They just feel the alienation of themselves. Pinned inside their vehicle alone. And we experience this a lot. But you know, although I was being a little facetious at the beginning, it's actually quite possible. It's actually quite possible to do this, to meet things that, you know, there are people running. Some of them are totally miserable right now. Miserable. Have you ever run? I guarantee you. And there are other people who are just feeling joy. There are people who are very focused on the goal, at a goal, and other people are just immersed in the moment. Everyone's different. So this impermanence and interdependence does not have some particular constant value for our lives. We may like them, we may not. So anyway, this is our theme for practice period, and the theme is impermanence, interdependence, and empowerment, and this talk is titled Kindness, Impermanence, Interdependence. So I'm going to talk about kindness. We're going to do some loving kindness meditation practice here before the day is through. Cultivating loving kindness, or what's called metta in Pali, or Maitri in Sanskrit, it's really wonderful. And we'll talk about just doing it in daily life and also as a meditation practice. So this meditation practice, I'll talk about a little bit more. But basically, we just sit and we imagine people and we think, we wish them well. We wish them well. That's what it boils down to. So sometimes people say, instead of loving kindness, you might say friendliness. That's a nice translation. Because loving kindness feels maybe sort of passionate. And love is, can be kind of grabby sometimes. So friendliness is pretty good. Kindness. And, you know, you guys will probably, if you hang out with me, you'll hear me talk about this model of practice I really value that's expressed in Vasubandhu's 30 verses. Yogacara text. And really that text says that if you want to practice, the most important thing to do is to cultivate non-afflictive emotional states or beneficial emotional states and cultivate awareness, interdependence. Those two things are the heart of practice. And so loving kindness is cool. Like a lot of practices, it does this, but it really, if you sit around and you think loving thoughts about people, you fill your mind with positive thoughts, and you likely will also have some mindfulness of negative ones, which is actually really helpful, and you'll feel connected to people, because you're just thinking about people. And if you go around and do kind things, you feel connected. It feels good. Yeah, you could sit isolated in your vehicle and think, here I am, alone, against the world. Everything has conspired to make me have to sit here. Or you can just think, wow, I hope you have a good race. I hope you don't have your toenails fall off or whatever. So loving kindness or friendliness, it's interesting because we have the term practice in our tradition that we use a lot. Practice. I was just at a big conference of Soto Zen teachers, and it was a giant calligraphy by Kaz Tanahashi, and it was just the character practice. And I would just stand in front of it and go, wow! This motion forward, but it was very immediate. And it was a Chinese character where he'd broken two of the brushstrokes because our practice is broken. We always mess it up. Guaranteed. Fail and fail again. Well, just get right back up. So, practice, what's that mean? Are we going to get good at it one of these days? If you just keep come sitting here long enough, will you finally be good at sitting? I don't know. I actually don't even know what that would mean. What would it mean to be good at sitting? I guess I will argue, I will say that I think you're good at sitting if you just do it every day. Then you're good at it. It's complete. So, if you don't do it, then it's good to get some support to do it. But yes, in our sitting practice, it's not really practicing to be something else. Well, that's the way we usually express it, but let's be honest. Most of us wouldn't do this practice if we didn't find that after doing it for years, we had changed. You might not notice that you're changing much after one day. You might just sit down and think, I think I just thought for half an hour.
Yeah.
And it's possible that I have a body, but I didn't even notice it was there. So that happens. So, you know, if we're thinking, oh, am I going to get something out of this today? Not very effective. But if we just are good at it, that is to say we just sit and do it daily, then something happens, and most of us will go, yeah, I think I will keep doing this because I don't like being miserable, and I don't like being selfish, and this helps me to not do those things. So, so there is some sense in that we're practicing. We're practicing it, how to be bodhisattvas, how to devote our lives to well-being for everything. And loving kindness is kind of so, you know, you say, well, there's two kinds of loving kindness. I can do this meditation where I sit and I think kind things about people, and that would be practicing. Because then, later on, I will go and actually do something nice and will cultivate the feeling that will drive my behavior. And this is true. If you do this practice and you just sit and you think loving thoughts about people and wish them well, then, you know, you'll see them and go, oh, yeah. Part of you go, oh, yeah, remember you wished them well. And then you'll just do something nice. So this is true. But actually, it's really important. Buddhist tradition it's weird. Yeah, it's weird. The Dhammapada starts by saying, first line of the Dhammapada, which is a really major, long text, is, our life is shaped by our mind. We become what we think. Our life is shaped by our mind. So if you just sit and think loving thoughts about people, this is actually doing loving kindness. You don't have to say, oh, I'm going to do this and then later on I'll be good. You're already doing something good. If you go through your life and your mind is filled with loving thoughts about people, it's already good. Action will flow out of it, but you don't have to think, oh, I better get up from doing this because then later on I'll do something good. It's all good. What your mind is doing is very, very, very important. It constantly conditions everything that will ever follow it. And it's also just life now. So you sit down as Zazen and be like, oh yeah, okay, well I'll just do this and then later on I'll be a bodhisattva. It's not preparation. It's not preparation. It's immediately diving in to liberative activity now. When we do loving practice, the idea is you visualize people, and there are specific kinds of people, and I'll go through those cues. But then we visualize a person, and then you just go through these phrases over and over again. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you be at peace. And all you guys who've done this 1,000 times have your own translations. Oh, well. It's just words. They're all very similar. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you be at peace. So, the problem with this is, you know, early Buddhism in particular, but all Buddhism in general, thinking about impermanence is super important, constantly emphasized. So, the weird thing about doing this practice is everything that you're wishing for something, for someone, is something you know will end. Everyone will not always be happy. Everyone will not always be healthy, guaranteed. Everyone will not always be safe. And everyone will not always be at ease. So most early Buddhist teachings are really different than this. They say, just think about how everything's going away. So when people get the things they want, happiness, healthiness, safety, and peace, you should be ready for it to change, because otherwise you'll cling to it. You go, oh, I'm happy. Oh, let me get my happiness. How can I keep my happiness? You get happy, and you immediately try and externalize it and figure out how the external world made you happy, and then you try and grab it. Grab, grab, grab. How did I get safe? People constantly trying to be safe, and some of the most people choose to be safe are pretty destructive. You know, we're going to go and kill people in foreign countries so we can be safe here. That's not very nice for the people in the foreign countries. So, I'm never going to leave my house. I know people who are they think the only safe place is just to be in their house, and they never leave. It's like, well, I get someone to go get groceries for me because I'm too scared. Or maybe you've got a little more subtle flavor where you're just like, I don't really let people too close to me. I don't want to be safe. So we build up all this stuff, try and figure out how that thing outside of itself will allow us to be safe. So a lot of the teachings that we'll get will not say, try and be safe. They'll try and say, get used to the fact that you're not safe. Right? But the cool thing about Buddhism, I think, is even though we get all these teachings, and my training is to be like, not cling to happiness, not cling to safety, not cling to health, be prepared for my own death, because it's coming. I'm dying. It may take a while. I kind of hope so, but, you know, whatever. It's not a projectile tradition So when someone says, oh, I'm really happy, my job is not to say, well, just remember, it's going on, pal. Maybe if it's a student with whom I have an intimate relationship, or maybe you guys, because we came here to face some difficult truths. But generally speaking, the idea is we're going to extend something a little different to everyone, which is, oh, we'll just think, yeah, maybe be happy. I understand that you want to be happy, and I do too. So let me just wish that you will be. So there's kind of a little friction there. But we're just understanding that we all, people want the same thing. We want to be happy. We want to be safe. We want to be healthy. We want to be at peace. So anyway, basically what I was just talking about is usually metapractice should be balanced with mindfulness of impermanence so that we don't just turn our metapractice into a system of building our attachments. So if we have a little bit of internal awareness of impermanence, then we can do a lot of this mindfulness work and realize, oh yeah, and it's true, it's fine. And we'll taste this, whether you're conscious of it or not. You know, if you do metapractice, you're sitting there and you're thinking about your son. And you're picturing your son, you're thinking, may you be happy, may you be healthy. And, you know, it's possible you will cry. It's possible you will cry. In fact, I just talked to someone a few minutes ago who said, yes, I did meta practice for a week and every day I cried. So maybe not, but it's not uncommon. And why is that? Because we know all the things we're wishing for that person. We know in our bottom of our experience that we can't hold them, we can't control them, and they won't always happen. So the great thing about meta practice is, we would generally, you think, well, what I'm doing when I do this, I'm just infusing my whole consciousness with friendliness and love. It feels good, it's warm and expansive. But actually, a totally almost opposite thing happens, which is we realize, it's not going to go away, and we have big boluses of negative emotion will emerge. That's not a mistake. That's actually entirely the point of the practice. Because when we really intimately cultivate a love for people, we realize that there's suffering in every life. And so we can be mindful of the negative feeling we experience. And being mindful of negative experiences is a very, very powerful central practice of our tradition. So if you're sitting here and you're thinking about someone and then you realize instead of you're like saying these loving phrases and you're thinking, that's you're really mad. For those of you listening to this tape, I was gesturing, punching someone out. So, you know, you may have very negative emotions, sadness, you may have shame, anger, judgment. That's cool. It's cool. That's just the universe manifesting in one little form here. Can you just stay with it and intimately know your feeling? So mindfulness of the emotion that arises as you say the phrases is the center of the practice. So you say the phrases, and then you notice what you feel, and that's plenty. that was a somewhat coherent discourse on loving kindness and impermanence, although I may have wandered a little bit. So then I'm supposed to tie this to interdependence. Interdependence is amazing. Wow. It's like, do I want to just sit here feeling lonely in this miserable shell of a consciousness, or do I want to realize that I'm totally connected to everything forever, always? Oh, I like the latter. It feels good. Sometimes it's hard. Well, you turn on the news and you go, oh, I think I'd like to go in my shell. Right? But if we keep opening, it keeps getting more expansive. So they're developing awareness of interdependence, I think, is just really, really central to what our practice is about. And there are lots of ways to do it. So on Saturdays, we chant the Metta Sutra. You should come on Saturday. It's pretty cool. Lots of chanting. It's very beautiful. ritual, people doing really beautiful actions together. So if you haven't been here on a Saturday, come on over, see what happens. One of the things we chant is the Metta Sutra, which is the Loving Kindness Sutra. It's really beautiful. It's got an amazing, rare quality for Buddhist sutras in that it makes sense. So I can recommend that. But in it, it says, you're talking about cultivating loving kindness for people, and he says, we are wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease. May all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, the medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those born and to be born, those living near and far away. So everyone connected. So this metta practice is like, we're bringing them all in. The idea is not to be like, yeah, we'll bring like these guys in, and you guys can just stay out there of my circle of loving kindness. We're like, we'll bring everyone in, but oh no, this guy's wrong. There's no one excluded, which is hard. Can you think of anyone you don't want to include in your circle of loving kindness right now? Probably. Some of us, the list is long. It was great. One time I was teaching this in a class, and everyone's talking about the people that's hard. And one guy, we got around in a circle, he said, you know, I don't really have any people that I can't extend, you know, really unconditional loving kindness to. And we're all like, whoa. And I'm like, well, that's amazing, or maybe you're just deluded. But then, in that little gap where I'm judging him, he paused, and then he said, but I have enormous amounts of hatred for institutions. So, you know, we put it somewhere. Our consciousness is conditioned to judge things and push them away. Well, that's just the way it is. But it doesn't mean we have to keep doing it. We can participate in our conditioning. That's the central idea of the original Buddhist teachings. Your suffering is not intractable. You have empowerment within your suffering. That's pretty much what it's about. So, there's all kinds of methods to cultivate this sense of interdependence, to including everything into total connection, not having these excluded components. So, in metta practice, we actively bring, we reach over here to this thing that we want to exclude from our field of bodhisattva loving compassion. And we go, I'll just pull it over here and see if I can get it a little bit closer. And then you watch your mind, mindfully, watch your mind going, no! And that's cool. That's good. So, it's going to be fun. Now, there are actually lots of methods for cultivating. So, what I should reel back and say is, basically, the metta practice, loving kindness practice for cultivating awareness of interdependence is affective. So it operates mostly at the level of feeling and the heart. So the idea is you just start to feel connected to people because you think, may you be happy. And you know that you want to be happy, so you feel connected. And then you start reaching out to things you would ignore, and you go, may you be happy. And it's like, oh, I feel connected to that stuff I normally ignore. And then you reach out to people that you really don't like, and you go, oh, I may be happy. May you be happy. And you just start to feel a little closer because you realize, oh, yeah, I can feel this connection. So it's an affective, which means an emotional way of cultivating awareness of interdependence. But you know, in the Zen tradition and in the Mahayana schools in general, a lot of the methods for cultivating awareness of interdependence are very cognitive. So the thinky part up here. So I like metta practice because it's good for me to get down in here in my emotions. But, you know, you got your Heart Sutra. How many people here have chanted the Heart Sutra? Well, shoot, you guys got to get over here in the morning if you haven't tried it. It's a good old time. We chant the Heart Sutra here 5 days a week in the morning after Zazen. It's really wonderful. And, you know, basically, it's unbelievably incomprehensible the first time you see it. You just be like, what are these even words? At least for most people. Some people will feel a little, you feel connection to it maybe through your body or just chanting with other people. So you're cultivate some sense of interdependence just by making sound with other human beings. That's actually why we have all this ritual. You do things together beautifully. You let go of your ego, trying to do it your own special way, and you feel connection. But the Heart Sutra cognitively points towards interdependence, because it basically says all the things that you think are separate are not. When you think your eyes are separate from the things they perceive, they're not. It's just a process. It feels separate. You think that your awareness is separate from the things it perceives? It's not. It's all just a dynamic process. It feels separate. It's a very vivid type of experience we have, but they're all connected. Or you think like, boy, when you think about someone that people don't like right now, it's like one word really comes to mind, doesn't it? But I'm trying not to go there. So, anyway, you think about someone that's generally reviled, and it's like that person's position in the world is intimately related to the fact that I exist. My perception of them forms what I experience about them. What we're doing is not like they're out there in this other realm. It's like we're always connected. So anyway, we have these cognitive methods like the Heart Sutra. There's a really famous Buddhist philosopher named Nagarjuna, widely regarded to be the greatest philosopher in the Buddhist tradition, I think. And basically his whole method is just constantly point out that any way that you're thinking that things are separate, they're not. That's all he does. And the cool thing is he almost exclusively works with things that you believe about the Buddhist teachings you've received. So he pretty much only deconstructs the stuff that you've spent all this time learning that you thought was right and religious and beautiful. That's the same thing with the Heart Sutra. The Heart Sutra is just a methodical deconstruction of your belief system. So you can go, I'm going to go beyond my idea that, oh, I've got this awesome Buddhism. And you can meet people and go, yeah, we've got this awesome moment that is incomprehensibly vast already. What's happening in this quadrant of your field of vision? Something amazing. There's like beings living up there. There's like millions of organisms living in your armpit. Did you know that? I'm not making that up. So there's so much going on just in a moment within this field. And then we get kind of the pinnacle of focus on interdependence in this tradition that is really closely related to Zen called the Huayin. And the Huayin is really cool because it's just like super psychedelic. It's just like, it says, it'd be like the Buddha came and the Buddha had his hand in the mudra, the cosmic mudra. And inside his hand were 10,000 bodhisattvas listening to his discourse. And on each of the 10,000 bodhisattvas, there was a jeweled diadem with 1,000 lotus flowers. And in each lotus flower, there was a Buddha. And that Buddha was adorned with millions of gems, radiating light through 10,000 world systems. And every one of those 10,000 world systems had 50,000 Shravaka listener practitioners listening to the Buddha's talk in that Dharma realm. And inside that Dharma realm, and it just, I mean, and it goes on for like 1,200 pages. And if you read it, you go, what's the point? But if you just give up and you just let it draw you forward, you begin to feel this sense that every tiny thing is connected to vast, infinite things. As Dogen says in the Genjo Koan, you should know that although things look round or square, the other features of all oceans and mountains are infinite in variety. Whole worlds are there. It's not so just beneath your feet or around you, but in one drop of water. And then the next thing he says is, a fish swims in the ocean. He says, every tiny thing you see has a whole world in it, beyond what you conceive it to be. And that's true for a drop of water, your whole sphere of experience. And by the way, that drop of water is an entire ocean with a fish swimming in it. Who's like, wow, I got a whole life. And then he talks about how amazing the fish's life, just swimming around in its ocean, which is limitless. And then he says, when you find your place where you are, practice occurs. This is vast, but finally, boom, right here. All that vastness is only available to a human being in an instant of consciousness. But it is available. So this isn't going to be something you find when your mind suddenly is able to see the past or the future. It's actually already here. All this infiniteness of interdependence is here. So we can see this, or we can use this kind of teaching in doing our loving kindness practice. Because we don't have to do the practice to wait until we're good at being loving. We can just see what's here in our field of awareness as we do the practice. Particularly focusing our awareness on how we feel. And honoring and trusting and letting flow whatever that is. So if it's aversion, if it's distraction, if it's love, if it's a sorrow, just calling it up and letting, find your place where you are. Find your place where you are. So let's do a little meta practice here. I'm going to invite you all to find a seat that is conducive to stable, upright sitting. And so I guess this is what you call guided. This is what you call guided meditation these days. So once you've found some stability in the lower body and some uprightness in the upper body, can let the eyes closed, meta practice, being focused on visualization is best practice with eyes closed. So just take a couple breaths and settle the awareness in your body. So now just keep this awareness of the body. And the body is not yourself, so maybe you can even visually picture yourself sitting in your field of vision, like an imagination. So the idea is we're bringing ourself to mind. Focusing our mental energy on ourself, which, you know, we don't know what the self is. That's fine. Just use your intuition. Just focusing awareness on yourself in this moment, how you are. And then let's begin to say these phrases inside the head. So I'll say them out loud, and you can kind of, as you learn them, just say them along with me in your mind. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be healthy. May I be at peace. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be healthy. May I be at peace. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be healthy. May I be at peace. You can just continue to say these phrases, or if you lose track, you can just stick with may I be happy. Just directing the phrases towards yourself and being aware of how you feel. And if the mind wanders, that's just fine. When you notice you're not aware of the phrases and the person we're focusing on, you can just bring your mind back to the activity of focusing on yourself and repeating these phrases. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be healthy. May I be at peace. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be healthy. May I be at peace. And just keep repeating these phrases and just notice whatever feeling is there. And if it might be a bad feeling. You might not want to think loving things about yourself, or you might have some resistance. That's fine. You don't have to make a particular feeling happen. You just say the phrases and then be mindful and intimate with the feeling that arises. Well, let's just let these phrases go. Check in with the body. See what the breath is like right now. Now, I'm going to invite you to think of someone that you really love unequivocally. Perhaps someone in your family or a good friend. You don't have to think too hard about it. Just pick someone who comes to mind fairly quickly. And once you have chosen someone, just begin to picture them in your mind's eye. Perhaps just standing somewhere. Just focusing the mind's imaginative power on this person. Now let's begin to say these phrases directed towards them. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you be at peace. And just continue to say these phrases. When you become focused on something else, just come back to the phrases and how you feel. Letting whatever arises move and pass in the field of awareness. Let's let these phrases go. Just check in with the body. So there may be strong feelings or almost no feelings. There'll be any kind of feelings. That's all fine. It's not really about figuring something out about yourself. Just about being here with how you are as you visualize a person and say these phrases. So now I invite you to think of someone towards whom you have almost no feelings. So maybe someone that you just know from field of work or your neighborhood, some place of business, just someone you see, you probably don't think about them very much. And don't look too long, there's probably a lot of people in this category. And once you find somebody, just begin to picture them in the mind's eye, in front of you. Well, let's see these phrases towards this person. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you be at peace. And just keep saying these phrases directed towards this person and just see what happens. Well, let's let these phrases go. Check in with the body. So now, we're going to practice these phrases, thinking about someone towards whom we have some aversion. And this is something to be really careful with, so I really, really encourage you, if you haven't done this practice extensively, to not pick someone towards whom you have really intense negative feelings. It's just probably not going to be helpful. So we want to think of someone that maybe we find kind of annoying, maybe just someone, you know, when we have to deal with them, it's like, ah, darn it, I would like to go somewhere else. So, Stalin, not an option, everybody. Okay, so we're not going there. People always go there. Oh, but what about Hitler? Yeah, let's not do that. So, just someone that, you know, it's kind of hard, a little hard to deal with. Not someone who's, you know, abused you terribly. But there's got to be someone in your life that you're like, ah, I would like to skip meeting you today. Well, think of someone like this. It may take a minute. And you don't have to get this perfect. So once you think of someone, just picture them in your mind. And here we're likely to feel a friction between the phrases we're saying and our feeling. Well, that's okay. Just see what happens. So this is like seeing what it's like to be human in a particular circumstance for you. Picturing this person, let's begin to say these phrases. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you be at peace. Keep your awareness focused on this person and just say these phrases a few more times. Just see what it's like. You're strong enough. Or if it's really, really terrible, then just take a break and observe your breathing. Okay, well, let's let this image go. Just come into the body. Just notice how we are. Congratulate yourself for doing some of the most powerful bodhisattva work a person can do. And now let's picture ourselves, the person we were thinking about as a loved one, together, standing together. And then put this neutral person next to the two of those people. And then put this person we have aversion towards. So there's four people standing together in our field of vision. And just picture the four of them. And begin to say these phrases. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you be at peace. And just see if you can keep saying these phrases while I talk a little bit more, picturing these four people. Maybe just bring all the people into this room, into the image. So those four people, and then everyone in the Zendo and the Founders Hall, just saying these phrases: may you be happy, may you be safe, may you be healthy, may you be at peace. Well, let's picture all those people running the marathon, include those in our awareness as we say these phrases. And maybe let's picture the muskrats that live in Bademakaska Lake out in front of this building, and the ducks, the hawks, squirrels, the trees that hang over the banks, all these included. May you be happy, may you be safe, may you be healthy, may you be at peace. Just saying these phrases, we picture everyone in our entire nation and all the land. Everyone and all the land radiating out into the oceans, the water itself. May you be healthy down into the coral and the fish, the whales, plankton, all across the great land masses, little children whose mothers go and spend 2 hours collecting water for them, great heads of state sitting around in opulent mansions, butterflies flitting from flower to flower. Grandparents, all of them included, may you be happy, may you be safe, may you be healthy, may you be at peace. And let's let these phrases go and just draw the awareness back into the body, the breathing body. And then we can let the eyes open, release the posture of meditation and stretch if you'd like. My friends, I was having so much fun with the fish and the butterflies that I ate up all of our time. But they deserve it. They deserve it. They really do. So, I will say thank you all very much and turn this over to Raymond.